I'm Carrie Miller, and this is NPR News, now in depth on what we now know about this new administration. I saw a tweet last week from a political journalist on the eve of the Comey testimony that said, keep in mind, Donald Trump has only been president for 139 days. That's an acknowledgement, of course, that this young presidency has been embroiled in controversy and scandal from the get-go. But it's also a batten down the hatches warning that there are months and months ahead, 42 in all, of this president's first term. So what do we know so far about how Mr. Trump and his Republican majorities will govern? Can we discern that in the midst of so much political chaos? Two guests, your view too. Since opinions about the president among Democrats and Republicans appear to have hardened, I'd like to hear this morning from independent voters, whether you lean left or right, what's concerning you about the president's agenda and his ability to govern? So taking all questions, of course, just about the political news of the day for our guests. But if you're an independent voter, whether you lean left or right, I'd really like to hear from you about what's concerning you about the president's agenda and his ability to govern. You're showing up in interesting ways in a lot of the polling research that's going on. So an opportunity for me to hear from you as well. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Wendy Schiller is with us. She's chair of the political science department at Brown, and she's with us from Providence, Rhode Island. Wendy, a pleasure to have you back. Welcome.
It's good to be here, Carrie.
Michael Fauntroy joins us. He's associate professor of political science at Howard University and with us from D.C. And Michael, pleasure to have you back as well. Thanks.
Oh, my pleasure.
I want to take a call for both of you that came in during the Ken Rudin segment, but I think it goes to something that Ken and I were talking about. So let me go to Mark in Minneapolis. Hi, Mark. Thanks so much for waiting. Oh, shoot. I think the call dropped. Here's what he wanted to ask about. He wanted to make a comment on the idea of what Speaker Ryan said, Michael, that Trump is new to this and we really shouldn't have the kinds of expectations that we would have for an experienced politician. What's your response to that?
I think that's an unacceptable explanation for what's going on. We're talking about the presidency of the United States, the single most important position in the world. Now, it is true that he's inexperienced, so factually that's correct. But we don't really have time and space for people to learn on the job. I mean, this isn't an internship. And part of the deal is, as president, you surround yourself with experienced, well-qualified people to help you shore up areas in which you may need some assistance. And I don't think that we have a lot of that with this administration, whether it's foreign policy and a very inexperienced Secretary of State who appears to be disconnected from the White House on some policy making. And in other areas, it just does not wash for me, at least.
So, Wendy, this is interesting, because how do you square what Michael says about the need for experience with what American voters were clearly saying, which is, we don't like what we've got. Donald Trump is something new, and we want him to bring new people into government. How do you square both of those?
Well, I think the fundamental component to the expectation that Trump would change things or, you know, change Washington was that he sold himself as a very good leader. He sold himself as a very sharp and successful business executive who could get things done. And that's what he sold as the package, part of the package at least, to a lot of his voters, and certainly Republicans who voted for him, who may not have embraced his most racist rhetoric on immigrants and other groups, particularly Muslims. But even if they didn't embrace that, they wanted a Republican in who was going to roll back regulation, cut taxes, and reduce the size of the federal government. And at the very least, they expected competence from Trump on being able to do those things with a GOP-controlled House and a GOP-controlled Senate. So I think the disappointment now is that he's showing himself to be incompetent at leadership, at putting together a really good team and moving forward and being consistent and putting the Republican Republican agenda forward uncompromised. And I think that's the disappointment for a lot of people thus far in Trump. Every president takes a long time to start things up. Every president has a rough first year.
I mean, there's
every
always
president
a,
takes a long time to staff up.
There's always a learning curve, right, Wendy, for anybody, because the job is so huge. But something
well, sure.
different's going
said,
on here.
And everybody said Barack Obama didn't have a lot of experience,
right.
and he was on the job. I mean, this is true, but you have to be committed to the job itself. You have to be committed to the tasks at hand. And it doesn't appear to a vast majority of the American people, given Trump's approval ratings are hovering in the mid-30s, mm-hmm. that he's not sufficiently committed to learning how to be president. And that's the big question mark for, I think, everybody in the country. Will he actually try to learn how to be president?
The approval...
Hey, Terry,
yeah, go ahead,
quickly,
Michael, do. Yeah.
Just very quickly, we also have to remember that he came into office with a seriously weakened position. He lost the popular vote by 3 million.
Right.
Okay? And I think that often, you know, voters are voting for certain things when maybe they don't understand themselves what's necessary in this job. And as a result, we end up with a variety of things going on that make it less possible for him to do the things he said he was going to do, because many of the things he said he was going to do actually can't be done easily or done well.
What do you have in mind specifically?
I'm thinking about this whole health care reform piece,
uh-huh.
and I heard in an earlier segment with Ken, you know, I just think that there's a complete misunderstanding about how to reform our health care system. You may recall a couple months ago he came out with a quote saying, hey, nobody really knew how complicated this was. Well, actually, everybody knew, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah. Some of the voters that have been pretty disappointed so far and contribute to that low approval rating are independents. So I'm going to grab some calls here from some independent voters to Mark in Hibbing. Mark, you self-identify as an independent. Is that right?
That's correct.
What are you thinking about so far? You say you're frustrated.
Well, yeah, the Democrats and Republicans, it's nothing new for them to, you know, have partisan politics. And it's not something that they're proud of. But, yeah, when you have a president who comes in and says, hey, we're going to change things and doesn't realize it's not a business, it's a nonprofit government, and you can't just fire people. You can't just say, hey, I'm going to dismiss what you say because I'm the boss and I don't like it. So as an independent, you'll try to vote for the best person, what's good for America, and you get somebody in there who says, I know America better than you. It's very frustrating.
So, Wendy, do you agree with what Mark is saying here about the idea that running the government, that the president came in with a frame of how to run government that he just didn't realize was going to be difficult to carry out?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure I completely agree with the idea that he had a whole agenda. I think everybody in the country was surprised he won. I think he was surprised he won. I don't think he thought he was going to win. He's not a politician. He hasn't been thinking about policy for his whole career. So he came in and he didn't really have a policy plan. And he still doesn't have a policy plan. So he wants to undo things, but that's not an affirmative policy plan. And so he hasn't done the homework to figure out the nuts and bolts of the policies he does want to change. And I think that's the question mark. You don't need to try to change a lot, but if you're going to dismantle the healthcare system for 22 million people, you better have a replacement. And I think that's the big question mark. Will he do any homework to figure out what the ramifications are of the things that he's doing now or that the GOP is doing with him?
Darian says on Twitter, I'm quite concerned about the hundreds of unfilled positions in the government without nominations to try to fill them. Michael, I think it was a week or so, 10 days ago, that the president tweeted that Democrats were being obstructionist in holding these hearings and trying to get some of these positions filled. When the numbers came out, the president is far behind, and his team, I should say, are far behind making these nominations. I mean, he's got hundreds that he hasn't even put people up for yet.
Yeah, and you will recall early in the administration, Steve Bannon was quoted as saying that one of the goals for the Trump presidency was to deconstruct the administrative state. And often people think about that in terms of undoing policies, and there's certainly some of that. But the other part of that is in not filling positions in government so government can't do anything. And some of what you're seeing with regard to these numbers pertains to this idea of deconstructing the administrative state. If you look at the State Department, there are more than 300 positions that require Senate approval, confirmation, that
wow.
have not even been nominated.
Wow.
And imagine what that has to do to foreign policy operations around the world. That's a significant problem.
Right.
And so I think that what we're seeing here is, one, a willful attempt to freeze the actions of government. And two, part of the problem is I think that there is a growing number of Republicans who don't want to work in this administration because they think it's the Titanic and don't want to be tied to it.
Call here from Lee in Minneapolis. Hi, Lee. Are you an independent
Hello.
Voter? Hi.
Yes, I did vote for Trump, and I saw online with the people who spoke that because he wasn't from the establishment and he wasn't from politics, he will be different. I never followed politics in my life more than ever, and I have never thought that I would learn so much about how this country really works and how the presidency works. And after all these years, after all these days, I'm sorry, these days, after 100 days of Trump presidency and all this, mm-hmm. I just realized that it was a big mistake to pick somebody with no experience. And it is amazing how, this is not just my opinion. I know a lot of people who vote for Trump, they will line up behind Trump, thinking that he was the person who was going to draw the swamp.
Yeah, Lee, I'm going to take that question to Wendy here. And Wendy, I'll add that the president has majorities in the House and Senate. It is pretty extraordinary that we're 6 months in and between the president and his majorities, no major legislation has been passed. What's going wrong there?
Well, you know, I think we need to have a little bit of historic perspective on how long it takes to get things done. If you look at Bill Clinton's administration in 1993, it took him essentially till the fall to get anything really done. They got a budget done, and they got NAFTA done, I think in December of 93, with the Republicans. So the Democrats only did one thing that year, and that was the budget, which they had to do, appropriations and taxes and spending. So it's not unusual for a president not to get a lot done. The one thing that's really surprising to me is the repeal of Obamacare. The Republicans have been talking about repealing it for 6 years. How is it they did not have a ready bill that could pass both chambers under the GOP, ready to go and out the door? That's the big surprise. And frankly, that's not Trump's fault. That's the GOP leadership in the House and Senate's fault.
Michael, you agree with that?
I do, but I would add, underlining Wendy's point earlier, they didn't have a policy, a bill in place because they didn't think he'd win. You know, nobody thought he was going to win. And so I think Wendy's 100% right there. The congressional Republicans have failed in so many different ways because they've had the votes to do certain things. They've been talking about repealing Obamacare from the moment it was passed.
And you agree that they've also failed the president in that?
Well, I think they failed the president. But you know what? They are a lawyer with a difficult client. You know, and as Wendy noted earlier, I don't know that President Trump has an ideological core, and his position appears to be we're just going to undo everything that Obama did, and that should be fine, when that's really not going to be fine. And congressional Republicans are deeply factionalized right now, and many of them, particularly those who won in districts that Secretary Clinton carried in the last election, are wondering just how closely they want to tie themselves to somebody when they're going to have a difficult reelection effort next year.
To the phones to Craig in Minneapolis. Hey, Craig, hi. Thanks so much for waiting.
Hi.
Yeah, tell me what you're... Yeah, hi, we can hear you. Tell me what you're thinking about.
Well, I call basically because I wanted to express my disappointment at NPR for becoming what I consider slanted and one-sided. You ask for people to call in not to give their opinions on what the administration or the president is doing, but only to give their opinions on what they think he's doing wrong.
No, I didn't say what is he doing wrong.
Yeah, you did. You said, I want to hear from independents that are concerned with what the president is doing.
And here was the question, Craig. I said, opinions about the president among Democrats and Republicans appear to have hardened, so I'd like to hear from independent voters, whether you lean left or right, presumably people who support President Trump or do not are in that mix. What's concerning you about the president's agenda and his ability to govern? And we've just heard with health care, maybe I could have worded that different, but we've just heard with health care, Republicans are not carrying out the president's agenda. Are you concerned about that kind? That's what I'm after. Perhaps I could have been more artful.
I'm concerned with how obstructionist the entire government is and how nobody wants to work together and nobody looks at big picture. I mean, everybody, even some of the conversations that we've been having already about Obamacare and how he wants to implode it and do away with it. Well, Obamacare is imploding and doing away with itself. How many states only have one option for an insurance carrier? Mm-hmm. Some of those states are looking next year at having no option. You know, Minnesota is one of the states that has one option. I am a person that buys my own insurance. And every year it goes up 50, 60, 70%. And then last year, the carrier that I had got out of the business completely. You know, I've heard that Iowa is looking at potentially having no insurance carriers that will be for the general market of people that aren't insured in a group.
Well, Craig, let me do this. Let me take what you've said and come back then to our guests. So clearly, Wendy and Michael, a lot of voters, no matter who you voted for, feel some urgency around doing something about how Obamacare isn't working. Some of it appears to be working, some of it does not. So what happens with that? And Michael, why is it that Congress cannot seem to come to some kind of agreement that would satisfy voters like Craig?
Well, I think the bottom line here is the Republicans understand that it's easier to sort of criticize something and more difficult to replace it. Wendy noted earlier that there are 22 million people who are projected to be out of insurance with this new plan coming forward. But there's been no evidence that the current plan that's working its way through Congress is in any way going to make it any better for rank-and-file citizens. So the question then becomes, how do we get from repeal and replace to improve? And I don't know that the Republicans are actually working in that direction. And so while I get the caller's frustration, everyone who takes that position needs to understand that for most of the last 3 to 4 years, Republicans have been talking down the Affordable Care Act and have not put forth any ideas to make it better. And so repealing it and getting rid of it actually is going to make things worse. And what we need to be doing is figuring out a way to come to a program that will actually insure more people and do so at less cost.
And Wendy, when we say it will make things worse, one of the standards of that is fewer Americans will have health insurance. I mean, that's one of the things that Republican majorities are wrestling with here, right? How to make this work, make it better, and not have millions of Americans lose that insurance that they got and that they want to keep.
Well, and the first place we should start is asking for open hearings in the United States Senate on the health care bill that they're writing. I think your caller is absolutely right. He's frustrated that he wants to be able to buy reasonable, affordable insurance. But if you pass a law that takes away most of the subsidies, doesn't require anybody to purchase health insurance, and rolls back the Medicaid expansion, you're going to have no market for insurance companies to come in and offer insurance. So that's going to be self-defeating. The question for us is, what is the Senate doing? Why are they writing a bill totally in secret? You know, this is a really, really bad thing for everybody, Democrats, Republicans, Independents. You want to know what your legislators are actually doing with your tax dollars and your laws. And the Senate has a secret committee that they've appointed. You can find out who's on it. There are no women on it, by the way. And they're writing the bill. And that's it. They're not going to have any hearings. They're not going to tell anybody what's in the bill. They're just going to present the bill to the Senate and hope that it passes. And that's just something that's bad for everybody, whatever political side of the fence you're on.
If you've just joined this conversation about politics, Wendy Schiller is with us from Brown University, and Michael Fauntroy is with us from Howard. Kyle says on Twitter, disappointed that President Trump isn't using his disruption strategies to get bipartisan things like infrastructure spending in place. Wendy, I think this is another place where the president is probably being foiled more by members of his own party than by the opposition, because that infrastructure plan has a big price tag. And it was long before he even, you know, got serious about announcing it. There was a lot of dissension among Republicans about how much it would cost.
Well, I mean, I think the obstacles come, you know, because when the Democrats controlled the Senate and the House was controlled by the Republicans, they still could not get an infrastructure bill until Paul Ryan came in and worked it out to his credit, and they finally reauthorized highway financing. It took them years and years to do that under divided government, which is surprising, not as surprising as under unified government. But right now, the same issues exist, which is that the conservatives in the House do not want to spend the money, and the Democrats now are going to become a lot like the Republicans, very obstructionist. Your callers are not wrong about that. They see electoral gain in obstruct, obstruct, obstruct. Now, infrastructure is something everybody should agree on. We want to fix our bridges and roads. But if you feel like you can get some political ground, you're going to try to do that. So my fear is even if Trump came forward with an infrastructure plan that was reasonable, not just all private tax breaks for big companies, but in fact some public money, the Democrats would be very hard-pressed to cooperate with Trump at this point in time. So they may be the ones that actually sink an infrastructure bill more so than the GOP.
In the end. Okay. Paul in Minneapolis called to say, all the journalists keep saying that the American people voted for Trump, but less than a third of voters actually voted for him. He doesn't have a mandate. I don't want to relitigate the details of the election. I think there's a lot to talk about. And the president is the president now and in what is happening. So I'll just say that. Jake and Chisholm says the left and the media have been hindering the president more than anything he's done himself. Michael, I have to say, the president himself seems to undermine his legislative agenda. It seems like Congress will, you know, get focused on something, and then the president will distract by tweets or comments about some of these controversies. They don't seem to be on any kind of the same page at all, do they?
No, they don't. And when I hear comments and questions like the one you just read, I'm just left to wonder. You know, the media aren't in the room when Congress is writing bills, and they aren't in the Oval Office when the president chooses to send out a tweet. And so I just wonder if we as Americans are keeping our eye on the ball here. Congress writes laws with or without the president's input, and the president's party controls both chambers of Congress and the White House, and so they should be able to work things out amongst themselves and pass it through Congress if they want to. And the media can't get in the way of that, and the Democrats can't get in the way of that, save some technical things that can go on in Congress. So I just think that voters need to pay close attention to who's actually in charge and how the rules work, because I think if you understand that, you see that this is really about the inability or the unwillingness of congressional Republicans in the White House to work together on important matters.
If you're an independent, love to hear from you in this conversation. Whether you lean left or right, what's concerning you about the president's agenda, his ability to govern, the way his own party is or is not working with him, the way the opposition is trying to obstruct or oppose what he's doing? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter, at CarrieMPR. Before we go back to the calls here, I want to ask Wendy and Michael about, there was a really good piece, I think it was in the Times yesterday or Saturday, Wendy and Michael, about, maybe Frank Bruni wrote the column, that must be it, about how the Democrats don't have their act together and they really have to figure out who they are in this moment of opposition to Trump. Wendy, what would you say about that?
I actually don't think that that's necessary to do at all right now. I think you can see, I mean, the Republicans have had a split between the establishment Republicans and the Tea Party since 2010, when the Tea Party really emerged on the scene. And if you want to make a parallel with the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party, the progressive wing, probably now the Elizabeth Warren wing, and the rest of the Democrats, it's the same sort of dynamic, right? It's sort of really want to, you know, upend everything and really go for your most important policy priorities. But you don't control government right now. You don't control it at the state level or the federal level. Your job is November 18. That's the job of the Democratic Party. It's to win as many state seats and as many federal seats as they can. I don't know that they're going to need a coherent platform to do that if the GOP and the Trump continue as they are. So I think trying to solve these problems now is premature. You wait until you're really going before the voters in the ballot box and figure out what the country looks like then, and then you shape up and try to win your seats at the local level, state by state, county by county.
Michael, that's interesting. I found the Bruni column here, and he's arguing that although polling research is telling Democrats that those voters that went from Obama to Trump, they believe the Democrats are still out of touch with less affluent voters, and the Democrats are not getting the message. Are you with Wendy on, yes, that's an issue, but deal with that after you have some more seats?
I am, because the reality is voters are driven more by anger and frustration than they are by coherent legislative policies. I mean, President Trump is the prime example of that. And many of the voters that Bernie Sanders is saying Democrats should go for are never going to vote for Democrats because they were voters who were primed on things like racism and misogyny. Not all, but a substantial number, substantial proportion of them. And so let's get the people organized, and then you can talk about what happens as you get closer to the election.
Okay.
People don't, most voters do not have, and this is not a knock on voters, it's just the reality of people in general. We don't have long enough memories to be focused on policy matters in June of 2017 and carry that all the way to November of 2018.
Allison Birchwood says, well, it appears to me as an independent voter that the Democratic Party should rename themselves the We Hate Trump Party. They're not putting forward any solutions. They're just being obstructionists. To the phones to Al in Eden Prairie. Hey, good morning, Al.
Good morning. Great conversation. I just let you know that I, after evaluating both of them, ended up voting for neither one of them. The thing that Trump kind of almost took me on was the draining the swamp thing, because just the way politics has been working for the last few years, just disheartening. And I guess my thoughts are it's kind of tough to watch this whole process work out. Trump has been shooting himself in the foot, very true. The Democrats have been doing absolutely nothing but obstructing or trying to obstruct everything. And the whole process is turning into, seems like just a gridlock mess, and everyone's waiting for everything just to implode. It's really kind of a sad state of affairs in the greatest democracy in the history of the planet.
You know, Wendy, I find this interesting when, although Al voted independent, what we, and back, tell me whether this is true or not about the latest research, but when you look at some research into past elections, especially congressional elections, you find the voters are drawn to the most partisan people from their parties that are running. And so when they're upset about gridlock, to some degree, that's who the voters are sending to Washington. What's the latest research tell us about that?
And Michael, you know, can weigh in on this too. It's exactly, you know, what we know in political science is that when you are either really partisan, you love your party, or you're very ideological, you have a particularly strong set of beliefs about politics, you're going to get out the door to vote because it spurs you to vote. So one of the issues is that the people most likely to vote are the most passionate, and usually they're the most committed to a party or committed to their ideology, and there's not a lot of room for compromise. That's more true in the primaries. And so the general election, many more people vote, independents vote, but in the primaries, what we'll do is produce really very Democratic, very liberal, or very conservative Republicans, because most people voting in primaries are very, very passionate about what they're thinking about, and they're not as sort of middle of the road. And I think it's exactly right that the federal government is probably not the place to look for really responsive government in the next couple of years, and look at your state level, look at your county, look at your mayor's office, look at your city government. You know, Americans have to remember that the backbone of our democracy is not the federal government. For most of our history, it's been state and local government. And that's a place where you have a bigger impact as an individual voter, and it's easier to see what your elected officials are doing. So I would urge everybody to pay very close attention to local politics and state politics, particularly whether you're for or against Trump. You know, that's where the action's going to be in the next couple of years.
You know, Michael, it's interesting to look at climate change in light of what Wendy just said. Look at what different states are doing and different cities are doing in the wake of the president deciding to pull out of the Paris Accord. That's a prime example of that.
Yeah, and I think you're going to also see opportunities for that in terms of infrastructure, education, housing. The president's budget is going to be cutting billions of dollars from a number of other programs. Some states are going to have to pick up the ball on some of that. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be costly. And there are going to be some states that are going to have fights over income taxes to fund some of those problems. But the reality is, as Wendy said, you know, the solutions that we're looking for are going to have to come in different places, because they're just not going to come from Congress and the White House right now.
Do you both think that that political wisdom that says that a new administration really only has maybe 18 months at the outside, really a year to get stuff done, holds today? Wendy, do you think that's right?
No, I mean, I don't think that's right. I think if you look at the Obamacare, you know, the bill was pretty much written in its almost final form in December of 2009, but it didn't pass. The whole thing didn't really pass till March of 2010. So I think that if you look at the Clinton administration, you look at the Bush administration, they got Medicare prescription Part D. I mean, they had certainly had 9/11 and had wars to worry about and really very external shock events. But it took Bush a couple of years. It took Obama a year and a half, and it took Clinton a couple of years. So I don't think there's a clock that expires anytime soon. It's just that if the president's credibility continues to erode, that's the big question mark for Trump. You can't be successful when your approval ratings are below 40% consistently, and they're not climbing higher.
And I should ask you why that is, Wendy, because you still have voters here that support the president quite strongly.
Because as particularly for that voter who said that he didn't vote for either Clinton or Trump, that caller, because politicians who are running in the House, particularly because the House is up, everybody's up for re-election in the House in November 18, and in the Senate you have a number of Democrats and not that many Republicans, but nonetheless, they're looking at who's going to get out the door to vote and what they're going to think. And they're not going to go out on a limb for President Trump if he's not particularly popular and if he's sliding downward, because they're concerned that that will cost them votes in the end. So there's still a wait and see in the GOP. They're committed to Trump today, but 6 months from now, if people are still not getting behind the president, doing anything that goes on a limb or is risky or hurts people on his behalf is likely to cost them at the polls, and they're not going to want to do that, so they're going to back off.
Wendy, really good to have the insight today. Thank you very much. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Gary.
Michael, always a pleasure. Really appreciate your insight and experience for us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you missed part of the conversation, you can find it on the podcast and always the political junkie there. You want to start your week off with what the political junkie Ken Rudin thinks. How to find my podcast? Just search NPR News with Kerry Miller. Wherever you get your podcast, it'll be right there waiting for you when you're ready.
Looking for a new podcast? I'm Tracy Mumford, a producer for NPR News. I'm part of the team working on 74 Seconds. It's a new podcast that looks at the shooting death of Philando Castile by Officer Geronimo Yanez. It happened last summer in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. Yanez is now facing charges in Castile's death. 74 Seconds looks at what happened that night and what happens now when a police officer goes on trial. Reporters John Collins and Reham Fashir will walk you through this case as it unfolds. It's a story about race, policing, and justice in America. Subscribe to 74 Seconds wherever you get your podcasts.